This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. To some analysis of Xerox looking to take over HP as Walgreens is exploring a potential private takeover. We'll get to that in our next segment. Right now, the departure of McDonald's CEO Steve Easterbrook, just the latest in a series of high-profile corporate partings in the past month. Let's talk about it with Diane Swonk, chief economist at Grant Thornton here in Chicago. Diane, is this just cyclical where you see CEOs kind of shuffling around, or is this sort of an anomaly here?
Well, what we've seen is a major uptick in the number of CEOs and turnover rates among CEOs since the 1990s. That really started in the latter part of the 1990s, and it ebbs and flows. But the bottom line is, in general, CEO tenure is way down from the period, post-World War II period. In response, many CEOs have upped the ante and asked for a lot more to take on the job of being a CEO, knowing that they're not going to have it for very long length of time. So they're often getting paid what we used to pay CEOs in 30 years in 3 years' time.
So what sort of an impact does that have on a company? It would seem like a longer tenure might be better overall.
Well, longer tenure if we're focused on long-term results, and that's not what we're focused on in terms of the stock market. It's short-term results that matter most, and I think that's part of what's being reflected in this as well. I think it's unfortunate because I do think that there is something to stability, not, you know, commenting on any individual companies, but certainly stability allows for plans to actually get implemented, and then you know who to blame when things go wrong if you have a long tenure of somebody who's in office, or who to really reward when things go good. And too often, I think we're focused on these short-term decisions rather than much more longer-term decisions that we need to get back to in the U.S.
Yeah, you touched on this. It does seem like everyone's really just focused on the next quarter and not looking 3, 5, 7 years down the line.
Exactly. And the last quarter actually was very bad. We saw that, you know, the productivity numbers were quite bad, which forced up labor costs, which is one of the reasons we're seeing companies push back on wage gains. Even with a low unemployment rate, we are not seeing workers, one, they're not getting the wage gains they once did, and two, the pushback has been fairly dramatic and fairly quick and swift as productivity growth fell in the third quarter. Obviously, profit margins are being squeezed. It's not just wages, it's also tariffs squeezing profit margins. But that means that they're trying to push back, and we're seeing major retail giants like Amazon rely more on robots during the holiday season to try to deal with a tight labor market condition and not pay as much out in terms of wages as they would have to if they only hired human workers alone.
Talk about the importance of wage growth to the wider economy. Obviously, individual employees would like to make more money, but it's really important, at least in certain increments, to have it for all of us.
Exactly. And one of the things we had been seeing was much of the wage growth since about 2015 had been in the lowest wage jobs. And that was great news because these are the jobs that have been lagging the most since the onset of the expansion. Higher income people were doing much better. They had more wealth. They were able to ride the stock market gains, and they also earned better pay. What we've seen more recently is a real slowdown in wage growth. And what's been interesting about it is how much the lower end is now taking it on the chin after finally regaining some ground, which they continue to need because we have a smaller middle class than we once did, that now no longer getting those wage gains that we once saw. And in fact, the deterioration we saw in consumer attitudes most recently was driven by the lowest income households as well, which means they're feeling a bit of a pinch, and they're the ones already living paycheck to paycheck, so they're not going to be quite as free with their spending this holiday season as we come around towards Christmas.
Thanks so much, Diane Swonk. Always good insight and analysis. Diane is chief economist at Grant Thornton here in Chicago. Coming up next, could Walgreens be going private? Walgreens Boots Alliance, it's reportedly reviewing a potential deal to take the company private. Let's find out about it. Bruce Japsen, Chicago-based healthcare writer for Forbes. You can hear Bruce's reports on health Monday evenings and Saturday mornings here on News Radio. Bruce, tell us what you know about Walgreens possibly going private.
Well, I think this is definitely something they're considering. I think a lot of folks think, like, if for your listeners out there who aren't familiar with a leveraged buyout, essentially they would go get private banks and private equity companies to essentially buy the shareholders. So Some folks are thinking it would be valued at between $60 to $67. But Walgreens is a giant company. So I think the analysts are pegging this as maybe a 50-50 chance. Now, one of the reasons why they would try to do this is I think Walgreens is under a lot of pressure. When you are a public company, you got to answer to shareholders. You got to give quarterly earnings reports. You've got people constantly asking you questions. What are you doing? How are you doing? Et cetera, et cetera. They're in a tough spot. They're doing a lot of different kind of deals. We know retail space is emptying because of Amazon and online shopping. So they, like CVS, are trying to fill it with more healthcare services. CVS has more of an answer in the sense that they bought Aetna last year and have sort of a $20 million paying customers that Aetna can guide to CVS stores. Walgreens doesn't necessarily have that. And so they're under a little pressure. Walgreens has a lot of partnerships they're working on. They got an arrangement with Kroger. They got an arrangement with Humana, Microsoft. But these are just partnerships and things they're testing. I think Wall Street's getting a little impatient and saying, okay, when are we going to see a rollout like CVS talked about today on their earnings? You know, they're rolling out 1,500 health hub stores. Walgreens is kind of doing testing things here and there. It's not necessarily that Walgreens doesn't know what they're doing. It's just that Walgreens says, hey, we need more time. Going private, they wouldn't have to worry about Wall Street saying, when's this going to happen? When's that going to happen? That type of thing. They'd be able to just sit back and shield themselves. And also, I'm going to be writing about tomorrow. There's a little overhang, too, in the opioid litigation. You know, Walgreens owns a big distributor, and they're probably going to be facing something with that. So there's some wild cards here that being a public company, you have to, it's a little more difficult to navigate than if you were a private.
Yeah, and I mean, that quarter-to-quarter pressure, in fact, we just talked about this with Diane Swonk, really makes it tough when you have to innovate and change, and certainly healthcare is changing.
Yeah, and if we're talking about, you know, maybe we don't want to bring up the R word, do we? You know, if we go into a less rosy economic situation, you know, you've got elections coming up. You've got, you know, the specter of some talking about more regulation if a Democrat wins, or, you know, what you have now is completely unpredictable day to day. So, you know, if you go private, it's expensive. Are there banks that are going to be out there, private equity, that are going to be able to cough up a lot of money? And another wild card is Stefano Pessina. He's the CEO of Walgreens, and he's worth billions of dollars, and he holds over 15% of the company. So I think, you know, what is his role going to be, and what is he going to offer up to a potential private takeover?
Bruce Japsen, always good to have you on the show. That is Bruce Japsen, Chicago-based healthcare writer for Forbes. Up next, Ford's on a mission to make electric cars cool.
You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Ford unveiled a fully electric 900-horsepower Mustang at a car show in Las Vegas today. Let's talk about the efforts to give electric vehicles more of an edge. John McElroy is joining us, automotive industry analyst and host of Autoline.tv, based in Detroit. John, tell us, what's Ford doing here?
Well, look, Cisco, this is just a concept. It's at what they call the SEMA show, the Specialty Equipment Manufacturers Association, in Las Vegas this week. It's a one-off. It's never going to happen. But in about 3 weeks' time, Ford's going to unveil a crossover vehicle, like a mini SUV, with very strong Mustang styling characteristics at the LA Auto Show, and that could cause a sensation.
So you mentioned that it's just a concept. Should people at all get excited about it if they're looking to actually see something like this?
Well, look, the SEMA show is all about eye candy. Automakers and others bring out these wild-looking cars that bring a lot of people into their display booths where they try to sell them other things. And so Ford brought out this electric Mustang. Tons of power. It's actually got a manual transmission, which is kind of funny. But like I said, this is just sort of to whet people's appetite, because the real news is coming in about 3 weeks.
And are they also just trying to gauge interest, too? You know, you mentioned whetting appetites, also to see, hey, is there really a market if we pushed forward with maybe something similar?
Well, look, Tesla has proved there's a market for electric cars. As long as an automaker comes out with really sexy styling, all the advanced technology, and something that really performs quickly. And so all the other electric cars, except for Tesla right now, have been, you know, just sort of the automakers trying to comply with regulations. Ford is the first traditional automaker that's going to come out with a sexy and blindingly fast EV. And like I said, that's coming in about 3 weeks' time.
And of course, everyone's sort of waiting. They've watched Tesla, but they're waiting to see if the battery technology is really there for something that can perform like a Mustang.
Yeah, well, look, you know, there's no question that batteries degrade over time. But guess what? Engines wear out over time as well. And certainly Tesla has proven, in a few of the other automakers too, that these batteries are pretty resilient. You know, you can count on them lasting 10 to 15 years, which is about as long as anybody's going to keep a car anyway.
Always good analysis. Thanks, man. John McElroy joining us. Automotive industry analyst, host of Autoline.tv, based in Detroit.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Women can sometimes face different challenges in handling money. We'll discuss some strategies to lessen the gap. It's Personal Finance Wednesday. Also on the finance front, helping children learn the basics of money. A 37-year-old woman is dead after being hit by a truck while riding a bicycle on the Northwest Side this morning. House Democrats announced the first public hearings in their impeachment inquiry of President Trump. They will happen next week. On Wall Street, the Dow is down 10, NASDAQ is down 31, and the S&P is down 1 point. Oil is down 1.5%. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets lower today. Not by much, though. Let's find out what's going on. Matt Shapiro is joining us, president of MWS Capital here in Chicago. Matt, what do you make of what you're seeing on Wall Street today?
Well, I think the market really was such a run we've had, Cisco, obviously taking a little bit of a pause, pretty natural. You know, in the past, when the market's gotten up here over the past 2 years, you know, investors have felt a little bit burned, had some big reversals. So, you know, it's going to take a couple more months to see if the market can hold these levels. Certainly earnings are, for the most part, behind us, a little bit better than people thought, and the market's kind of looking for better earnings in the last quarter of the year, and hopefully a resolution of the first part of the China trade deal.
Yeah, without that deal in place, is Wall Street, I don't want to say ignoring it, but there's just been so many ups and downs, different news cycles when it comes to the trade war. Is Wall Street waiting for something really positive or really negative to happen there?
Well, I think, for one, the economy seems to have mostly shrugged it off, but at the same time, it's been, you know, it's hurt China. It's definitely contributed to a decel in manufacturing in the United States, although 86% of the economy is consumer spending and real estate and things like that. So both sides want to get it done. The market is a little bit on edge if, you know, we don't get this agreement signed, this first part. So, you know, there is downside if that China deal doesn't go through within the next 2 or 3 months. Definitely the market would pull back. But however, you know, with interest rates being so low, for now, the market is taking it as a big positive that the China deal will get done.
Let's talk about a big possible deal. Xerox looking to take over HP. HP stock up significantly today. At one point, it was up something about 16%. What do you make of this deal?
Well, with this and, you know, yesterday's rumors about a Walgreens being taken private, you know, when's the last time we saw big private equity buyouts? It's been a long time. So people think, you know, Xerox would be purchasing a much bigger company, Hewlett-Packard, in the legacy computer business, and thinking that they can make something happen with all the parts. I've been looking actually at the bonds of both companies, and so far, you know, creditors, the bond market seems to look favorably on a big leverage deal. In other words, they wouldn't pay high rates of interest. So that, I think, is driving some of these leverage buyouts between this and the Walgreens potential of yesterday. So that's something we haven't actually seen in quite a while, big leverage buyouts. Actually very positive overall for market sentiment.
Yeah, and explain why. Why is that good? Why is that saying good things about what's going on?
Well, when investors and, you know, corporate managers feel like they can take risk and, you know, purchase a $20 billion competitor in the case of Xerox, reconfigure it, you know, that's positive. The economy moving along, you know, legacy parts being retooled for the future. For that's definitely positive for sentiment overall.
How does when a CEO leaves, like, for example, McDonald's, let's shift gears for a moment. McDonald's, obviously a strong company, deep bench. It's not like there's a lack of leaders at McDonald's.
Right.
Is this sort of a seamless transition?
Well, in the past, McDonald's has gone through quite a few CEOs and kept on going. Obviously, major unforced error with Easterbrook and, you know, obviously the board, there was nothing they could do. I actually had met the new CEO briefly years ago, kind of like randomly socially, really sharp together. I mean, the guy was already running, this is Chris Kempczinski, already running a North America operation. So I think the legacy of Easterbrook are these super marketing pros, of which the new CEO, Chris Kempczinski, represents that vanguard, kind of not the burger barons of the past that came up, you know, through the ranks. So we took that actually as a buying opportunity for McDonald's, has a really good dividend. And, you know, whether or not it clarifies the outlook over the next 6 months, the stock is down a little bit. Good time to get back in.
Yeah, because a lot of people are going to be waiting to see. A lot of investors may be on the sidelines.
Right. Exactly. These are the times, market's high. You got to look for potentially, you know, one of the 500 major blue chip stocks might be down on some sort of synergistic thing. Here we go, you know, a big shock with their, you know, really, you know, replacing a top tier quarterback in the NFL. Obviously, the stock was down. So you take a shot. Obviously, McDonald's is a core holding of ours. And always, you know, looking to add to it.
So let's talk in general. A lot of people saying that they needed to be defensive over the last couple of months. Is that how you're feeling in general for people's portfolios, kind of a defensive posture while we wait and see how the trade war and other things are going to shake out?
Yeah, I mean, for cautious investors, it's not a terribly bad idea. And Cisco, actually, in a lot of ways, the value stuff, i.e. the Hewlett-Packard Xerox idea, that value stuff has actually been coming on, i.e. more defensive, healthcare, things like that. So not a bad place to be. A lot of investors have actually gotten burned in the sort of go-go stuff, you know, the Uber, the Lyfts, some of the IPOs. So the market's kind of rationally shifted to be a little bit more cautious. And I don't blame investors for taking that position, especially while we await, you know, some resolution of the China trade deal and to see what happens with earnings next quarter.
All right. Good insight. Matt Shapiro, president of MWS Capital here in Chicago. Up next, Personal Finance Wednesday. Some different challenges sometimes faced by women when managing their money.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday on the Noon Business Hour, sponsored by Geiger Wealth. This afternoon, we're focusing on women and money. We welcome Ed Jurtzen, certified financial planner, MAC Investment Securities here in Chicago, past national president of the Financial Planning Association. Ed, in general here, I mean, we're not talking about investing decisions or anything like that. We're talking about the fact that in general, you do have money situations that are different with women, beginning with the fact that quite often their husbands do not live as long as they do.
You know, and you had talked about lessening the gap, Cisco, and I think that's important, but I think that's a generational gap. I mean, you've got, you know, older baby boomers and the greatest generation. Typically, the husband worked, took care of all the finances, and the spouse took care of the home. And so what we find often is that there is a very large gap when that occurs, when the husband passes away, the surviving spouse is often left wondering, okay, now what do we do?
And so that's not only, say, your investment for your retirement, but that could even just be the regular income coming in the door.
You know, so much in the advisory community focuses on the investments, and that's where that comprehensive nature of financial planning comes in. You know, for instance, we provide personal financial balance sheets that not only list the investment, but also the houses and who owns it and where those assets are. And that gives that great comprehensive overall view, because the last thing you want to have to worry about when you're surviving, you know, your spouse passes away and you're left being the surviving spouse, is have to worry about money rather than necessarily worrying about or appreciating the life that you had together.
Well, and is the first step there just getting everything organized while both of you are around and making sure that everyone knows where everything is? I know a lot of times a spouse dies and it's like this scramble. Where's the papers? Where's the money? What do I do with this?
Well, and this is why we're very insistent when we meet with a spouse, like if we meet with a husband, we're very insistent to having both spouses present at all meetings. And whether one or the other spouse takes, you know, part in a lot of the conversation, they just need to be aware of where everything is. And then we go through that scenario. What happens if? What happens if the husband dies or the wife dies or whatever spouse dies? What do we do and how do we do? Those are very, very important conversations because they lessen the stress when the inevitable happens.
And is there, in general, if one spouse is keeping track of the books, is there still a need for general financial literacy? I mean, just sort of understanding what's going on.
Without a question of a doubt, I don't expect spouses necessarily, surviving spouses, or those just not interested in finance to know what I know. But it's really important to believe in yourself. You don't lose half your IQ if your husband dies, but what you have to do is get yourself knowledgeable that if you are approached by different people with different ideas, that at least you have the wherewithal to have that conversation and be confident in that conversation.
And also, you're talking about the conversation. I mean, being willing to have the conversation, too, right off the bat.
Yeah, often what we find with widows is that they're hesitant to ask questions just because they don't know. And so we've had great success, but it takes time and patience in terms of guiding those surviving spouses, those widows, in regards to just understanding their finances. We, again, want them to have the basic, as much understanding as possible, because ultimately it does have to support them in their future years.
Thanks so much. Good advice. Ed Jurtzen, Certified Financial Planner at Mack Investment Securities, joining us on Personal Finance Wednesday. This time tomorrow, Technology Thursday, and still to come on this Personal Finance Wednesday, a double dose, teaching young kids about money.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's never too early to begin teaching children how to handle money. Let's begin with Craig Bolanos, founding partner and chief executive officer at Wealth Management Group in Inverness and Downers Grove. Craig, I have three young children. I fully expect them to take care of me in my old age. So I'm really, really interested in what you have to say here. Give us one tip right off the bat. How do we help kids understand money?
My heavens, Cisco, I love your enthusiasm, and let's get your kids on the right track. So I want to say to them, out with the piggy bank and in with a clear, translucent container. Because the youngest of kids, they're not doing math yet, but when it comes to having a visual where they see the change in the dollars grow in a container, it's perfect. But when they put money into the piggy bank or whatever animal or shape it might be and they can't see it, they just don't get excited. So the first thing I want you to do for your youngest is encourage saving in a clear, translucent container.
All right, yeah, give them something that they can see. That does make a lot of sense. What about any sort of habits? I mean, I'm just thinking, is that older, like teenage years, that my kids start paying attention to that?
Oh, that's a fantastic question. So study after study has shown that children actually have a set of their habits, including money skills, beginning as early as age 7. So we've talked about this before on the Noon Business Hour. You've got to be so mindful that little eyes are always watching. So if we're always slapping down the credit card to purchase whatever it might be, I don't know that we're setting the best example. Every once in a while, you got to pay with physical money, because I don't want any of the children thinking they're going to grow up having a magic credit card. There is no such thing, or at least I haven't found it yet. How about you?
Yeah, no, I haven't. And now, even though it's annoying, I mean, should you pay with cash maybe a little more often? I'm thinking that little kids, they start to think, I don't know, it's like this magic card that you just get whatever you want with.
No, it is. There's no magic carpet and there is no magic card. And I really sincerely do get concerned that it's consumer debt, specifically credit cards, that are preventing America from getting retired and staying retired. So if we can develop a habit system where mom and dad are paying with physical cash on occasion and making sure the little eyes are watching, I think it's going to be another step in the right direction.
What about allowance? What do you do with that?
Okay. Well, you know what? I like to link allowance to an actual task. I mean, when we give our clients, children, money, you know, when we give people money just for existing, I don't know that it's teaching anything. I really want to maybe flip the script, and instead of saying give an allowance, how about we give a commission, meaning you do this task, you get paid. You do that task, you get paid. Because what we have to instill again is that you have to get up off your butt to make a buck. I need to start linking work with pay. That's just going to be a positive message to the kids. So don't just give it for free. Make sure they do something to earn it.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. And developing those habits early. Thank you, Craig Bolanos, founding partner and chief executive officer at Wealth Management Group in Inverness and Downers Grove.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.